Welcome to the Morning Magazine. We welcome your phone calls at 460-1530 or toll free at 888-434-1530. But we do ask that you limit your calls to once an hour, please. If you are too shy, you can email the show at onair@wengradio.com. Views expressed on the Morning Magazine are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WENG, Viper Communications, or their advertisers.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of the Morning Magazine here on WENG. I'm KB, Ken Birdsong, normally joined by Ken Kenzie. Ken is on a, believe it or not, a working trip, and he'll be back in studio with us tomorrow morning here on the Morning Magazine. So we hope that you'll bear with us for that. And for the next hour, we're going to be talking with some interesting folks. We've got David Jenkins coming up here in just a moment, and he's the president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. We'll be telling you what that's all about. And in the last half of the program, we'll be talking with Jack Gray, a voice you hear on WENG daily, right here with his entertainment update, and we'll be talking with him in the last part of the program. But right now, joining us on the Morning Magazine, David Jenkins, president of the Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. Now, that's a national nonprofit grassroots organization founded on the premise that environmental stewardship and natural resource conservation are inherently conservative, and that the true conservative will be a good steward of the natural systems and resources that sustain life on Earth. David, good morning and welcome to the Morning Magazine.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Where am I talking to you at this morning?
I'm in the D.C. area, Northern Virginia, more specifically.
All right. And what's your weather like there?
Cloudy, rain.
Well, we've got cloudy and we're going to get some rain here, but I bet it's a little bit warmer here.
Yeah, I bet so too.
All right. Tell us a little bit about, you know, as I was looking over the information that was forwarded to us, conservative Republicans who are fed up with Trump's reckless executive orders and are speaking up. And when I read that sentence, I thought, gee, what happened to the Democrats?
Yeah, well, you know, if you look back through history, you'll see that a lot of our national conservation accomplishments actually come from conservatives, from Republicans, whether you go back to Teddy Roosevelt or whether you talk about what Nixon did with the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, and so forth, or Reagan with dealing with ozone depletion. And, you know, you can just go down that list. And here lately, it seems like that conservatives have just sort of left that issue to the other side, and we don't always get the best solutions when that happens, and we believe it. You know, it's our responsibility to be good stewards, and we'd like to see conservatives more engaged in that. And as you alluded to, you know, with the Trump administration, you know, they said they were going to drain the swamp, but what we've seen is just executive order after executive order that seems more designed to satisfy some special interest than it does to you know, do what's in the best interest of the country.
Sure. Well, you know, when you think about environment and environmental protection, I just don't, for some reason, I don't consider party lines or anything like that. I think we all should be concerned about our environment.
Well, most definitely. I mean, it affects all of us. This is one issue that, as President Nixon said, it's a cause beyond party and beyond faction. It affects everyone. And, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, some of the best accomplishments we've had. I mean, you look at all the, you know, the national park system, national forest system, wildlife refuges. We can all owe that to Theodore Roosevelt. And you just go up the list of Republican presidents and, you see all these major accomplishments. But, you know, here lately, we're not seeing anything like that. And we're not seeing that from EPA. We're not seeing it from these executive orders. You know, we're concerned about it.
Well, you know, we had the big discussion and the big hoopla over the pipeline, and now the big thing is this offshore drilling, the expansion of that, and obviously that's of concern to your organization.
Yeah, and your state too, I believe.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Well, yeah, you know, he signed this executive order that it's kind of a rush thing. You know, let's look at all the offshore areas in the whole country, including national marine sanctuaries, the remote waters off of Alaska, all along the Atlantic seaboard, the Gulf. Look at all the areas that currently there's no drilling in or the drilling's not allowed, and let's find a way to open it up. That's basically what they said when they were signing the executive order. And even worse than that, the executive order wants to look and see if they can roll back the safety measures that were put in place after the Gulf oil spill. And you know, for the life of me, I can't figure out what, anyone would want to do that, because we know what happened when we didn't have those safety measures, and now they've only been in place for a few years, and you want to like get rid of them again?
Yeah, like in your mind, why would you do that? What is their purpose for doing that?
The only conceivable thing that I can see is that the oil and gas industry lobby is saying, you know, we don't want to be bothered. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want these extra little hoops we have to jump over in order to be allowed to drill somewhere. We just want to, you know, just trust us. Trust us. We'll do it right, and you can just rest easy. We'll do it, and you don't have to make us do anything. That's typically what lobbyists do. They try to get the most favorable situation for their client, and my guess is that's what they're doing, and that they've got the ear of the Trump administration.
Well, obviously, that helps them avoid some cost.
Well, yeah, it does, but you know, look, it didn't let BP avoid the cost once there was an oil spill.
Right, exactly. So, look, are there any, when we talk about drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, are there any countries drilling in the Gulf of Mexico right now?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of drilling in the Gulf of Mexico.
But not by the United States.
These companies are multinational companies. So it's kind of hard to draw those lines precisely.
All right.
But there's plenty of drilling in the Gulf. But here's the thing. There's so much drilling out there right now, and there's so much oil. I mean, we have the Bakken shale oil coming out of North Dakota. We have other plays in Texas and so forth. And right now, our country is producing more oil than it ever has, and we're relying on, I think, OPEC countries for something like only 8% of our oil. And there's a glut of oil in the market, and what it's doing, it's taking that price of oil down below $50 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the oil that we produce here in this country costs more than that to produce. And in other words, you have to have a cost per barrel up around 60, 70, 80. If you're talking about the Arctic, it could be $100 a barrel. And so that oil is not profitable right now. And so we've got all this oil, and, you know, we've got prices depressed. The energy department says that, you know, this is going to be the case for to at least 2030.
Mm-hmm.
And these drilling plans are reviewed every 5 years. So what's the rush? Why are we trying to bring a whole bunch more oil on a flooded market? Conservatives are supposed to respect market forces and, understand capitalism better than the other side. And yet here we are, you know, the Trump administration doing something that really flies in the face of market reality.
Yeah. You know, I want to take you back to the late 70s and very early 80s when we were told that we had a gasoline shortage, an oil shortage, we were running out, gasoline prices went up, interest rates went up, the speed limit went down. It was incredible. What happened now? We've got more oil than we can burn?
Well, technology really is what happened. There were no drilling techniques to access that really deep oil down in the shale rock formations. And so we were taking advantage of what they call easy oil, which is oil that's near the surface and that's cheap and easy to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And, we ran out of a lot of those easy oil opportunities here in this country. So we, over time, we relied more and more on OPEC countries and right. other, you know, places outside the U.S. And, you know, when you depend on places other than your own home for energy, there's all kinds of things that can cause major disruptions, and you have no alternative. And so we got in a pinch there. But that wasn't as much to do with the total supply of oil in the ground. It was more to do with where we were getting it from and the technology of the day. Now, you know, we can access oil. You know, we have the deep water drilling and offshore. We have the shale oil. We have, a lot of new types of technology that are bringing more oil to market here domestically.
Yeah.
But still, you know, one of these days, that's going to dwindle too, and we're going to have to decide, are we going to other energy sources, or are we going to start relying on other countries again? And so we have to plan for that. And part of planning for that is not using up all your oil all at once.
Yeah.
You know, if we got oil below $50 a barrel, why do we want to pull more out and end up shipping it to Asia?
Okay, let me ask you, you were talking about the price of delivering a barrel of oil to the market and it not being, it was actually in some areas costing more than it was selling for. Is that why we got into fracking?
Well, fracking is an expensive process. But see, you know, remember a few years ago, oil was over $100 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a whole bunch of stuff, new types of drilling and spend a lot of money drilling. And with exploration and everything, when oil is over $100 a barrel, because you're going to make a profit. But as that oil price comes down, the things you can do and still make a profit, you become narrower.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually a lot of the shale oil that we're pulling out of the ground in North Dakota, there's been times where that's been selling at a loss because what OPEC is doing, they don't like us having all that oil coming out of the ground in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
What they're doing is they've been depressing prices to try to drive the price per barrel down so that that oil is not economical to produce anymore.
Right. So, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so here the Trump administration is trying to do something that would seem to be the same strategy the Saudis are employing.
All right. Now, let me ask you, if we're concerned about our use of oil, and we are, the cost and the fact that we're running out of it, there's only two things that I see we can do. One, we've got to figure out some really good ways to conserve, or two, we've got to figure out something to replace. And I think to conserve would be the easiest, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think you got to do both. I mean, diversification works in our finances. You know, we don't put all our stocks on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And diversification is the answer in energy too. You have things happening Tesla, you know,
right.
an electric car that goes from 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds.
Pretty amazing.
There's a lot of amazing stuff out there, and solar prices are coming down, wind prices are coming down, and so we're seeing a lot of changes on the energy scene. And as we, you know, develop more fuel efficient vehicles, we use less oil. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's good because that means the oil we have will last longer. But, you know, the other thing the Trump administration is trying to do now is, roll back the fuel efficiency standards and, allow more gas guzzlers out there. And, you know, given the technology we have today and the cars that we see that get around with, getting 40, 50 miles to the gallon, I don't understand why you try to roll that back and take us back to gas guzzlers when we can just keep making these vehicles more efficient, use less oil, let our oil, you know, last longer, go further, and, you know, put downward pressure on gas prices.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to agree with that. Just, you know, but, I mean, are there any Democrats on board with this?
With what?
With conserving.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Democrats are not really the problem here. Now, their approaches on all this stuff a lot of times are heavy-handed or, you know, too government-centric and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're pushing for the same kinds of things. They're supporting renewable energy. They're supporting conservation.
David, I've got a break coming up, and we'll take that, and we'll be right back. We're visiting with David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, this morning on The Morning Magazine. Stay with us. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on WENG. I'm KB, Ken Birdsong, normally joined by Ken Kinsey. Ken's out of the studio this morning. He'll be back with us tomorrow morning. Joining me this morning is David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship. President Trump just signed an executive order aimed at opening up new coastal areas, including national marine sanctuaries and risky Arctic waters, to offshore drilling. The proposal is meeting strong opposition from some conservatives who take the word conserve seriously and believe that there are some places drilling rigs do not belong. The executive order, by the way, has been criticized by Republican lawmakers from Florida, South Carolina, and New Jersey. And, David, your organization right here in the middle of it, you say reckless, and because you say that encourages offshore drilling, and it certainly does.
Well, yeah, it's reckless because we don't need that extra oil right now. And that the places that they're looking to drill, places that have been, you know, so far off limits, you know, they've been off limits for a reason. And usually that's because the communities nearby, you know, don't want drilling, or there's other safety concerns or issues with being able to drill responsibly. And, you know, we can't just look at, you know, this whole thing of, oh, let's drill more oil and it creates jobs or whatever the claim is, because if you look at our coastal communities and especially there in Florida with your world-class beaches, you know, along the I've got numbers for the Atlantic coast. I'm sure, you know, you can look at similar stuff along the Gulf. 1.4 million jobs and more than $95 billion in gross domestic product are dependent on healthy oceans and beaches and coastal communities, whether it's towards the fisheries for commercial fishing, whether it's recreation, or whether it's tourism along our coast. And those economic assets need to be protected as well. So you don't, you know, if you're going to consider drilling places, that's reasonable to consider, but you don't just go willy-nilly and get rid of all the safety standards and try to drill in every place possible without giving adequate consideration to those other assets.
Yeah. Now, not we're talking about new drilling. Are we doing anything to protect the wells that are already out there?
Well, that's the other thing we're worried about, is because part of this executive order that the administration signed is, you know, looking to roll back all the safety measures that were added and implemented after the Gulf oil spill. And, you know, those clearly, given what happened then and how, you know, they were to clean it up and the shoddy safety measures they were taking and shortcuts they were taking, clearly something needed to be done. There needed to be a higher expectation of drilling responsibly. And so, you know, we went through years. We had a bipartisan commission with Republicans and Democrats on it that recommended all these changes that needed to happen. And, you know, most of those changes haven't even happened. And then the few that have, Trump's looking to roll back. It makes no sense to me. That's why we say, when we say reckless, I mean, we really mean reckless.
Yeah, well, you know, I could understand to a point if we were in dire need of more oil, if we were, you know, every day scraping for more, I could understand that. But like you said, when we're kind of in a glut and we've got more oil now than we're actually using and we're stockpiling it, what is the reason for doing that?
Like I said before, I think it's just simply, bowing to the wishes of lobbyists. I mean, you got the oil, you know, the people like the American Petroleum Institute, and their job is to try to make life easier for all the oil companies, and they're concerned about profit and bottom line, and they're not really concerned about the health of our beaches as much, because that's not their job. They're focused on serving their clients. And, you know, if you have those guys close in with the administration, and some of those guys were on the transition team, basically they got their wish list out there, and Trump's going through and checking off all the boxes.
Oh, evidently. You know, you have quite a background in conservation. You've been involved in that for a long time. What got you interested in conservation?
Well, actually, for me, it's more of a faith issue. Growing up, you know, I grew up in the mountains of North Carolina, and loved to hunt and fish and hike, and got into kayaking later on. And, you know, I just marvel at creation and what, you know, this, as President Reagan said, this magical planet God has given us. And when you really admire this stuff and admire that handiwork, the whole notion of being responsible and protecting it is just something that comes natural.
Mm-hmm. And about what age were you when you decided that this was the area you wanted to spend your life in?
Well, I've always been interested in it. I think I did an internship on the Hill with a Republican senator back when I was in college, and I think that helped solidify my thoughts on that. And I also, believe it or not, I went to the Sunrise Service where Jesse Helms, the ultimate conservative, spoke and actually talked in these kind of terms about environmental protection and conservation, and it was very inspiring.
Now, if we have some folks that are listening this morning that would like to get involved or find out more about CRS, Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, what should they do?
Yeah, well, the best thing is to visit our website, and that is at www.conservativestewards.org. We also have a Facebook page, so if you go to Facebook and you search Conservative Stewards or Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, you'll pull up our Facebook page, and you can sign up and get our alerts on how you can go in and comment on these executive orders and make your voice heard.
Very good. It's certainly been great visiting with you this morning, David, and very interesting. Maybe we can have you back on a little bit later and after a couple of months or so and find out where we are then.
Yeah, I'd love that.
All right, sir. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners this morning?
No, just, go out and try to make a difference.
All right, very good. David, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us this morning on The Morning Magazine.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. That's David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, a great organization. And, of course, he told you how you can get a hold of him and what you can do if you'd like to get involved with that organization doing great things. We're going to take a break for the news from the Florida Network, and we'll be back on The Morning Magazine. Stay with us.